Power 106.
LA, it's your girl Yeffy Ortiz. Got some brand new music. I need you to turn it up and let me know what you think. It's Lloyd called Oakland on Power 106. I was
making Japanese. Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Jack Spencer and Mike Malott. A little later, Robert Wittenberg, state representative out of Huntington Woods, will be joining us to talk about both the Oakland County Commission situation, what they're going to do with the next executive, and also his red flag legislation. And we're going to tap into Dave Forsmark here in just a minute. He's a political consultant who's been very active in Oakland County Republican politics for some time. But first, to kind of tee this up, guys, the county commission, in the wake of the death of Brooks Patterson, has 30 days to fill the vacancy left by Brooks Patterson, or else it goes to a special election. Last week, the chair of the Oakland County Commission, Dave Woodward, decided to resign in the anticipation that he had the votes needed to become the next county executive. It sounds like things have gotten a little bit more complicated since then. I'm wondering if Dave Woodward might have made a miscalculation here in resigning from the board and creating a situation where he has 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats and thinking he's going to get a majority of votes.
Well, when you have the county treasurer, Andy Meisner, wanting the position, jumping in the middle here and saying that there was some kind of collusion involved and sort of throwing a monkey wrench into the whole thing, I think it has the potential to be a real misstep for the Democrats if they don't smooth it over pretty quickly.
Because it seems like the easy move here, Mike, would have been to let the chief deputy, who is in charge right now, Gerald Poisson, to just let him fill out Brooks' term for the next, 15, 16 months, whatever we've got left until January 1, 2021. Just let him finish things out and let the elections play out as they play out.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure that the Democrats wanted the executive office in their control. It's been a Republican office, despite the fact Democrats have finally taken a majority there. So it was an opportunity to move. Sometimes opportunities are not something you should jump on without thinking about it. So this one may turn around and end up biting them.
All right, join us now over the phone is David Forsmark, political consultant out of Oakland County in Southeast Michigan. Thanks for joining us, Dave.
Good to be with you.
So the big question right now on the political front here in Michigan is what's going to happen with the Oakland County executive position. Give us a little lay of the land here on what you think is going to ultimately happen and who the board is going to select as a replacement for the late Brooks Patterson.
Well, things have gotten a lot murkier in the since last Thursday. You have a lot of new members on the Democratic side, and some of them are very young. And they got rattled by Andy Meisner's pronouncements of collusion, that Democratic buzzword, and threats of lawsuits, which, are frankly ridiculous. You can't sue somebody for doing their constitutionally appointed duties. And there's never, unless he's alleging a violation of the Open Meetings Act, that 11 of them got together, which nobody has said. So anyway, the meeting was canceled last Thursday. That was supposed to happen where you had your nice little lightning. People are calling it a coup. I think that's overstating it. But the reason it was canceled was not because of out of respect to Brooks Patterson, but because it does require 11 affirmative votes.
So what you're saying is
to appoint someone.
And Dave Woodward does not have 11 votes right now.
I'm not saying he doesn't, but the Republicans weren't going to give him an 11th vote when this was set up for a member not to be there.
This is really strange, though. So Dave Woodward, did he resign as chair of the Oakland County Commission on the presumption that he had 11 votes and this was a fait accompli?
Yes, that's absolutely what happened. But now what's happened in the meantime, a week ago today, the Democrats had everything. They could appoint, let's say they wanted to appoint Meisner. If they had appointed Meisner, they would not only be in control of, they could just do it with 11 votes, they would also be in control of appointing Meisner's successor at the treasurer's office, avoiding another big primary fight in the Democratic Party. So this has probably cost the Democrat, $1 million in Democratic resources, the minimum.
Because right now you've got a 10-10 split, so it's very possible you get nothing.
Woodward gave up what a lot of people are starting to mumble about now is that Dave Woodward gave up the only majority Democrats have ever held in the Oakland County Commission for his own ambition. I mean, frankly, most Republicans I know, I think every Republican on the board, if you put a gun to their head, would say they'd much rather have Dave Woodward as the exec than Andy Meisner. I think that's without exception. Andy Meisner, well, because Dave is an honest broker. Dave's very liberal, but he keeps his word. He's willing to work with the other side. I mean, Chris Ward is still basically the head bureaucrat for the county commission. Every county commission has that administrator guy.
Yeah.
It's still Chris Ward. At least half of Dave's caucus is not happy that that wasn't a patronage job handed out to a Democrat. You know, he's willing to make peace. He keeps his word. Andy Meisner does not keep his word. Andy Meisner does not keep deals. I sat across in the election commission the last redistricting and watched him just lie to people's faces for months. And he doesn't care whether you know he's lying. Nobody on the Republican side wants Andy Meisner. That's why Woodward thought he could pull this off. And he still might.
This is Jack Spencer. What's playing out right now, potentially a political gift to the Republicans?
Oh, absolutely. Except for the whole Shelley Taub thing.
Hey, what's going on with Shelley Taub?
Shelley Taub put out this text to other commissioners telling them to delete that Channel 7, I think, was FOIAing their text messages on this topic, so they should delete them all. Right. And she would delete, delete, delete. Well, for one thing, no disrespect to Shelley Puello, but Shelley Taub was not included in any plotting conversations, coups, whatever you want to call it. Nobody went to Shelley Taub and said, we're involving you in this, or negotiations or anything like that. She's not on that level. So why she took this upon herself, I haven't a clue. I think it's just because she got called by one of the media and she panicked. But that muddies things too, and it also may make whoever the potential Republican vote for Woodward, you know, everybody's getting nervous now. The Democrats are getting nervous about Meisner talking about lawsuits, and the Republicans are all a little jittery about Shelley. And so if they, let's say a Republican votes for Woodward, was there some deal in a deleted text that Shelley made you, you know, everything's getting really hinky down there. I do think, though, that if Woodward shows up with 10 votes on Friday, he will be the next county exec.
Mike Malott here. What does this do for the Democratic Party? Does this leave them with a black eye?
Oh, it's chaos. I mean, they really do look like the Keystone Cops right now. And no matter what happens, it's all tainted now, no matter what happens. And Woodward will be a much weaker incumbent than this had all happened swiftly. You'd had some backroom deal mumblings and stuff, but having this all work like this, and Meisner, if he causes, you know, special elections, you know, it'll cost the county $400,000 or $500,000 to run an election. So yeah, nobody on the Democrat side is coming off great on this. Woodward's probably taking the biggest hit, mostly because, you know, people are starting to think, hey, wait a minute, you know, he gave up our majority, and now there would have to be a special election in Royal Oak for that seat, which, if the Republicans put up the right candidate, could be interesting. The other thing with that is Woodward, if he's not appointed, can run for his old seat. If you remember, Todd Corser did that. He resigned, so he could run for his old seat, unlike Gamrat, who was expelled.
That's a good point. So anyway, so we'll find out Friday what happens, but they could push that meeting into next week, and that's still within the 30 days. So this doesn't have to be done this week necessarily.
I don't know that anybody thinks more time is helping anyone.
No.
Who knows?
Yeah. Dave, I also wanted to ask you about the 10th Congressional District next door there in Macomb County and up in the Thumb. Have you been following that at all? And I'm curious why you think we haven't had anybody officially declare to run for the seat Paul Mitchell currently holds.
Yeah, I'm surprised that Lucido hasn't declared. I'm a little surprised that Pablo hasn't.
Are you hearing they're both considering it?
Yeah.
What do you think the holdup is?
Maybe they're talking to each other. I don't know. I've got clients in the 10th, obviously, who aren't interested. So, I mean, I'm sure it's just people talking to each other. And the other thing is, that's a very expensive, you know, because of the Macomb media market, it's an expensive proposition. I mean, basically Mitchell bought it the last time. He couldn't buy the Molinar seat because it's a cheaper media market and Molinar could get his message out. Whereas, you know, he just dwarfed Pablo by being able to, you know, be on Detroit and the Detroit metro media market last time. There's nobody there that's geared up for it, so there's nobody there sure they've got the resources. So I'm sure that's got a lot to do with who's figuring out who can raise enough money to do this.
Do you see anyone else getting in besides Lucido and maybe Pavlo?
I haven't given a lot of thought.
Okay.
Throw some names by me, and I can tell you whether I think they would or not.
Okay, how about Dan Lowers?
I think that's a possibility.
Okay. What about Shane?
I doubt Shane Hernandez. I doubt Shane's going to do that.
And why not? I mean, he could appeal to the right side of the Republican Party.
Right, but nobody else that we're talking about, you know, so could Lucido. So who's going to raise money? Shane's approach chair, but going out and pounding it like that's not really been his forte in the past. So I think he's the least likely of the names you've mentioned, but you never know. Candidateitis is a funny thing.
It was suggested to me that the Republicans are less excited about jumping into a race like this because it is going to be a Trump presidential year, and let's say Trump becomes a drag on the ticket, and do you want to get behind the Trump name, or you try and distance yourself from him? And in the end, what you're doing is you're securing a seat in the House where you're probably a freshman member in the minority. And what have you really gained?
Well, you gain a lot if you're a member of the state legislature and you become a congressman. That's its own gain. I mean, never stop Democrats from running. Or, you know, I don't think that's it. And in fact, that's not a district where Trump's going to drag much anyway.
Okay.
Trump's really popular in the Thumb, Northern Macomb. You know, there's parts of St. Clair, I'm sure, parts. But it's not a bad Trump district at all.
So this sounds like more of a situation where the candidates or the potential candidates are feeling each other out, seeing where maybe the consultants go, which consultant's going to line up behind who, and then when folks are ready to make an announcement, they'll make an announcement. But the Republicans aren't going to have a trouble finding anyone to run there.
I don't think they're going to have any trouble finding somebody to run there. I don't think they'll have anybody worried about taking it, but and any candidate who picks their where they're going to run or not by where the consultants go is not somebody I have a lot of respect for.
Okay, it sounds like we're good. Hey, thanks for the time, Dave. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys.
Join us on the other end of the line is State Representative Robert Wittenberg out of Oakland County. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's my first time.
We wanted to start out first with what's going on in Oakland County right now with the Oakland County executive search. What can you tell us about what your impressions are right now with the commission and where they're heading as far as the next county exec?
It looks like, I think it's this Friday, they are reconvening to see if they're able to come up with a candidate that they're going to appoint. I know that they opened up the process to the public for people to apply so that it would be a more transparent process, so that they would give the opportunity for other people to apply for the position. So I actually don't know what's going to happen. This is unprecedented. You know, Brooks have been there for a long time, so without having any kind of succession plan, and obviously it's up to the county commission, and it's an exciting time as a Democrat here in Oakland County because of the fact that the Democrats did take the county commission for the first time, and I think it was 42 years or something like that. So, you know, obviously it's tragic what happened with Brooks. You know, he leaves a legacy here in Oakland County. He worked, you know, at the county level for a long time as a prosecutor and as a county executive. And while he and I didn't agree on a lot of issues, I actually did work with him on a few things and had a pretty good relationship with him. At this time, you know, we have to be able to move forward because their budget is due, I think it's within the next month. And so they have to have something or someone in place that's willing to work with the county commissioners to get that moving forward. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen. You know, we've heard a lot of different things. But I kind of look forward to see what goes on this week.
Well, it was supposed to be Dave Woodward, right? He resigned as chair of the commission just so he could be appointed as executive. Do you think that those plans have been scuttled, and is it possible he doesn't get it?
I don't know. I know Dave has done a good job as the chair of the commission. I know that he's done a good job leading the Democratic caucus, and I had heard that as well. But who knows? I mean, they opened it up, and so all these different candidates, and I know Dave obviously submitted his name, and I would guess that he is one of the leading candidates to be appointed. But at this point, again, I there are so many moving parts here that I don't know what it's going to look like once they make a final decision. But that's absolutely been something that's been talked about here in Oakland County. And I know in the past, Dave's obviously interested.
I was wondering, considering the situation with the Democrats just taking it over here just so recently, how important is it for the Democratic Party to get the right person politically?
I think that's a really good point. And I think that is something that's really important, that they have to have someone with the leadership experience and the ability to lead. I mean, this is about the second largest county here in the state of Michigan, and so it's really important to have someone that has some experience, that understands what they're doing at the helm of the county, be able to work with the county commissioners. You know, in the past, that's something I know my local county commissioners here, I have a really good relationship with them, and they've always talked about how they were able to negotiate, even in the minority. You know, Dems have been in the minority for a long time up until this session. But that they were able to work across the aisle and do stuff that's important for the county that wasn't partisan.
Mike Malott here. If Woodward is the pick, does it give the Democratic Party in Oakland County a black eye if people think that this was a backroom deal?
You know, I don't know that answer. I can't really speak for how people are going to interpret, you know, whatever happens. Because, again, I don't know what's going to happen. I think, obviously, If the successor would have been named without having this application process, then I think that would have probably looked really bad. But they have opened it up, and I trust the commissioners. I really do. I think they're going to make the right decision. I'm not going to be in the room, you know, as they're deliberating. I don't think very many of us are. I guess if they do it open in the commission, but the conversations they're having and the interviews they're having. So I leave it up to them, and I trust that they'll do the right thing. I don't know if people are going to perceive it as something negative. I hope not. But the fact that they have opened it up for people to apply and for an interview and application process, I would assume that people will be okay with whomever is chosen as the next county executive, if that is the case. I mean, there's a chance that no one can be chosen. If it's not done within the 30 days, then it's going to go to the ballot, and then the people are actually going to vote on it.
Are you partial to Andy Meisner, who's running for the Oakland County exec seat, or Dave Woodward?
So I have a good relationship with both of them. Obviously, they're both really well-known and highly respected in Oakland County. I've known Andy Meisner for longer because we grew up in the same community. He went to school with my brother. My dad was actually Andy's Little League baseball coach. He's been a mentor to me, and I'm in the seat that he previously held from 2002 to 2008 here in the State House. But I've also worked with Dave Woodward on a lot of different policy issues over the years as well. And I like them both. I really like them both. I think either one would do a good job. But I just have a longer history with Andy, and I'm trying to succeed Andy here in Oakland County. He's done an amazing job as our treasurer, and I would love to carry that legacy, continue, representing the county well at the treasurer's office.
So you are going to be running for that post then?
I am indeed. I am indeed. Because Andy has been very clear that he is running for executive. Whether he actually, my understanding is that he's not even going to put his name in for this appointment process. As he said, I saw in the newspaper the other day, he was quoted as saying that he is a candidate for 2020. So that he is out there. And he's been working his butt off, that's for sure. He's been working hard, and he's raising money and getting out there. And so he said he's a candidate for 2020. So if there is an incumbent that he's going to be that's going to also be running, he has to run against. I think Andy obviously is a formidable foe against anyone that would be running for county executive. He's been elected countywide in 2008, 2012, and 2016. He's very well known. He's done a really good job, And so I know he's really committed to it.
So changing gears here, you are the lead sponsor and have been for several years on the red flag legislation, this legislation that would make it easier for family members and neighbors and loved ones of people who are troubled, have guns. They fear that those folks are either a danger to themselves and others, and they can go to the courts to get those guns removed from those individuals. Why do you think it's been so hard to get the Republicans to support your legislation?
Just a clarification just quickly on the legislation. So it is only a family member or law enforcement that can initiate the process. So it's not neighbors and things like that. That's actually part of why, I think there's been some issues that people thought it was a little too broad. In the past, we did have a broader definition of who could initiate the process. So, but we've worked with, Sheriff Bouchard, who's the Oakland County Sheriff. I've worked with him. So we've had Republicans, just not Republican leaders in Lansing, unfortunately. And we've seen even at the federal level, now Lindsey Graham has come out to say it's something he supports, even President Trump. Even before this, Marco Rubio was working on it. Here in our state, Fred Upton and Debbie Dingell were working on this legislation. So there have been Republicans who have been involved and who have been pushing for red flag laws, but for some reason just not the leadership here in Lansing. And additionally, my colleagues, some of my Republican colleagues, I wasn't able to get a Republican to co-sponsor the legislation in any of the three terms that I've been serving in. But I've had plenty of conversations with Republicans behind the scenes who said they're not willing to lend their name to co-sponsor the legislation, but that they're supportive of it, and they think that it's something that we need to do, and they'd be willing to vote for it. To me, I think it's just the leadership in Lansing. And I have a good relationship with Senate Majority Leader Shirky and with our Speaker. And so I've had conversations with them in general on gun violence prevention and some of the work that we're doing, as the chair of the Gun Violence Prevention Caucus, but for some reason it just hasn't come up. And I keep saying to people, if we continue to do nothing and expect that everything's going to change, that's insanity. And so we have to do something. We can't just continue to sit around and wait for something to happen. I don't want us to get to the point at some time where, God forbid, something happens in Michigan and we say, well, is there something we could have done? Could we have done anything to prevent? So this measure is not, we're not saying that this is going to end all gun violence, but this is a tool. This is something that we need to have in place to try to prevent tragedies from happening.
This is Jack Spencer again, and I'm the one who took the quote from former State Senator Rick Jones, who was also known as a sheriff. And his position on this was that Michigan essentially already has a red flag system, and that those who are close to somebody like that can tell the police there's a problem. And by making it an actual law, he claims that that makes it more likely that somebody, the way you'd have to go through it, would actually barricade themselves or something like that, and that the system as it is now is actually safer.
I respectfully disagree, and I've spoken with my colleagues in the House that are attorneys, is that you can't, because you can't take someone's property away. I mean, you can't do that and take their weapon away without obviously having some kind of court order until they commit a crime. And so this is a mechanism to temporarily do that, and it's due process because it has to go through a judge. A judge has to grant it. But I had conversations with some law enforcement who said, oh, yeah, we grab their weapons. Well, technically illegal what they're doing. They can't just take their weapons away from them. And so this gives a mechanism with due process. Again, you have to present evidence, and the judge has to grant the order. And there are protections in place if someone is doing it to harass someone else or doing it frivolously. That was part of working with Sheriff Bouchard here in Oakland County to make some of those changes from the bills from previous sessions that we've introduced. But we have to have some kind of mechanism, because otherwise you're technically, legally you're not allowed to take their weapons away from them unless you have a court order. And so that's what this does, is this gives that opportunity for family members and law enforcement. If they see something, or they see that those red flags, that there are things that are happening that worry them, that they're going to harm themselves or someone else. And again, this is for suicide prevention as well. And so that's why we're really trying to push this. And it's been on the books in other states, and there's data that show it works in other states. And so that's why we're trying to do this. And now I think it's like 17 or 18 states have similar legislation on the books.
Could this be something where it's different in different regions? Perhaps up here, the law enforcement people maybe go more behind the scenes and do this stuff. And maybe like in Oakland County, why Sheriff Bouchard would be in favor of this is maybe there's not the same process working in different parts of the state?
Well, so no, it would be the same process because obviously we'd do it at the state level, and then it would be the circuit court judges that you'd have to go to at this point. I mean, obviously I'm willing to sit down and speak with the chair of the committee and any other members. Obviously, I want a hearing. We'd love to get a hearing on this legislation so we can actually talk about the merits of the bill and what's good. But I'm not married to it exactly as it's written. Obviously, we want to make sure that the mechanism is in place. They're not going to take away kind of the teeth and what's important in this legislation. I think Bouchard, as I've had conversations with him, he went down to Parkland after the shooting and talked with law enforcement down there. He's talked with his law enforcement colleagues from across the country, and he said this is something that we absolutely need on the books because this is very helpful for us to try to prevent crimes. And so, if we wanted to change it so that it would be, district court judges that are maybe a little closer to the people of the community and know them, I would be fine with that. I'm not married to necessarily having it at the circuit level, but to me, we have to have something like this in place to try to prevent some tragedies from happening in Michigan.
So you've proposed this before in previous sessions, and to the best of my knowledge, you haven't been able to get a single hearing on the proposal. So what is there another way that you can move this proposal forward?
Unfortunately, we have not got a hearing, but I could tell you that, and unfortunately, as these tragedies continue to occur, people's minds have kind of been changing, saying, okay, we need to do something, right? We have to have something in place. We can't continue to do nothing. And so I think we've started to see, and there's been more of my Republican colleagues who have come up to me and said, tell me more about this legislation. I want to know how it works, what you're working on. And so we're hoping, obviously, the legislative level would be the best way, I think, to move forward. Without that, I don't know if there's going to be ballot initiative, if there are people really working on that. In other states, that actually has been the case. I think it was in the state of Washington. Theirs was implemented based on a vote of the people. And I'm not sure if there's another state, but I know for sure we don't want to go down that route at this point. We're hoping that we can actually do this, and my colleagues are willing to work together to get this implemented. And I know the governor said, just the other day, she tweeted that she's supportive of the legislation and she would love to sign the bill into law here in Michigan. So that's kind of the path that I'm working on now, and our members of the Gun Violence Prevention Caucus, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, Graham Filler, he and I have a good relationship. And so I was just texting with him the other day saying, let's figure out a time that we can sit down. So we're trying to get that coordinated so that we can actually sit down and have an honest conversation. And I'm hoping that he gives us the opportunity to present it before the committee, and then we can talk about it.
Representative Robert Wittenberg from Huntington Woods, we appreciate you being on the podcast today.
It was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. Hopefully we can do it one more time. They're kicking me out of the legislature soon. I'm in my last term, but I'd be happy to do it again before I'm gone.
Hey, we'll be glad to have you. Thanks again. So, Jack, we've seen this for several years now, this red flag legislation. My perception has been that this has become a political issue with the NRA. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but the NRA has been so strident against anything that even sniffs of limiting gun access to people that they would stomp down on anybody supporting this legislation in the Republican caucus. And that since most of these legislative districts have become, they're kind of predetermined as far as Republican, Democrat. And so any challenge that you get in your district comes from a Republican. So if you support this type of legislation, the odds that you would get primaried and that your opponent would get supported by the NRA becomes high. I mean, is that part of the problem?
I'm not so sure I agree on that one.
Okay,
I think because look at, if you understand what Jones was saying, and I'm not saying he's right, I'm simply saying I think he was a voice that people listened to. He was basically saying, if you make it technical and you have to go through the paperwork and so on, that's when one of these people who are unstable have to be notified, and they find out what's going on, that's when they might barricade themselves and do something.
So you think it's more of a policy problem? There is actually policy issues with this bill that is holding
this up. Well, I wonder if the bill would allow the paperwork or the process to start without the person knowing about it. I wonder if that would be helpful. Because this is what Jones's argument was, is that basically, once you get it to, so as you're having to get paperwork or this person's being notified and things like that, that's what he worried about. He worried about getting with the family, sort of working behind the scenes without the person realizing it, and then when you're ready to make the move, making the move. That was his argument. Now, whether that's true or not, obviously if Sheriff Bouchard disagrees, then obviously there's some disagreement in law enforcement. But I actually do believe that former Senator Jones was a major voice probably in the Senate caucus, and this was his argument.
Mike, what's your thoughts on this? Has this become too political?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a political reaction the minute you start talking about tightening down on some form of gun control. And the red flag legislation, it ought to make some sense. I mean, Bouchard's a Republican, and he sees the value in this. So maybe that's not exactly the legislation that ought to get passed, but start the conversation. Anytime you see these mass shootings, there are warning signs that people see, and they'll talk about it after the tragedy is over. I knew this guy was big trouble. If there's a legal way to address it ahead of time, that ought to be in everybody's interest. I don't think this really takes away your Second Amendment right, but at least let's have the conversation about that. And you saw it last week where we were getting press releases from very conservative Second Amendment types speaking out against red flag legislation. They didn't suggest a way to address these mass shootings.
Well, you mentioned Sheriff Bouchard. Now, that's Oakland County. Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if Republicans in Oakland County would feel different about this than Republicans north of M10. I would guess that those Republicans in Oakland County kind of see the writing on the wall, and that, you know, being strict on or taking a hard line on guns would not be politically advantageous for them. But for Mike Bouchard, who may have more ambitions and possibly the Oakland County executive seat, for example, he doesn't want to take a hard line on this because it wouldn't help him down the road. He's got to seem reasonable and willing to compromise on this if he's going to get any connection with moderates in Oakland County.
Well, before I blamed it on the NRA, and they certainly may be making that kind of a play as well, I really wonder how many sheriffs would be on one side or another. Because obviously when you're talking
That's
about something
question,
like
yeah.
this, you know, you're going to listen to law enforcement. And I still believe if you listen to what former Senator Jones was saying, I have to believe that was probably persuasive to say, basically, look, you know, when you start a process, that's when you're warning the deranged person ahead of time. Can you write a law that takes that into account and works behind the scenes? I would think you could. So I don't
make
know.
Make it more of a secret process so the deranged person doesn't know you're going after his or her guns?
Be better prepared. Prepare. Because that's essentially what Jones was saying. It sounded to me like it was like, okay, we know this is happening, and they had a way to do it where as quickly as possible the process played out so the person didn't have enough time to think about it and do something you know, that everybody was going to regret later.
There are different versions of this bill, and in some versions of that I've heard of, I'm not sure exactly how Robert Wittenberg's version is written, but in some versions I've heard of is you think somebody's a danger and you can show evidence for that, you know, postings of extremist rhetoric, whatever, and you can show that. You can go into the judge and get an order to confiscate the guns. The guy immediately... guy or woman, most often they're guys, the guy immediately can go to the judge and get a hearing, but the cops have gotten the guns before he's notified. if you can convince a judge that there's an imminent danger. Every time there's a mass shooting, there are people who come forward saying there were all kinds of warning signs. But in any red flag legislation that I've heard of, you got to convince a judge that there's truly an imminent danger. And then there's various ways to work that out. And one is, you know, get the court order, go get the guns, and then let the guy have his day in court after the guns are safely locked up somewhere.
That's one way to get around
it. And that's interesting because if you really think about it, what Jones's argument was almost the opposite of the NRA saying you got to protect people's rights. He was basically saying, look, if we got this unbalanced person, we sort of just work behind the scenes and get them.
Right.
So it's kind of inconsistent. And I also am aware, I was told a long time ago, by a former head of the Michigan Sheriff's Association, that if you try to get agreement on a lot of these issues by all the sheriffs, it's like herding cats. Are we going to see anything like the Sheriff's Association or the police associations backing this? What are the law enforcement people saying? I'm guessing you're getting mixed messages.
I would guess you're right. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Robert Wittenberg for joining us on the podcast. Also, David Forsmark, Jack, and Mike. And I just got back from Beaver Island for a week vacation. We also stopped by the Headlands Dark Sky Preserve, which was pretty exciting. You know, in the Dark Sky Preserve, guys, you're not even allowed to bring flashlights in, really.
That's the way it ought to be. I mean, really, if it's dark, it's supposed to be dark.
And it was dark. You had some red lamps kind of guiding you to where you could kind of lay in the grass and look at the dark skies, but...
What about headlights? Do you have to turn off your headlights to drive through the park?
Well, there's some very suggested, I guess, recommendations on what you can do with your headlights. But as soon as you get in the parking lot, you're supposed to turn your car in a way so it doesn't flash into the actual preserve. Mm-hmm. And some cars were better at that than others, I will say that. And then also, as part of our Northern Michigan tour, we went by Beaver Island. Have you ever been to Beaver Island, Jack?
I've never been there, but I know it was was it Joseph Strang? Was that
James,
his name? James Strang, Michigan's only king. He was at one time king of Beaver Island, and he actually got assassinated.
He did get assassinated on the docks there at the only city on Beaver Island by a couple of fellow Mormons who were a little disillusioned by his rule and felt like they got punished overly severely over something, and they took him out there on the dock. Have you ever been to Beaver Island, Mike?
No, I've not. And I know nothing of this history, so.
It's a very desolate place. It's certainly not a vacation spot. That's not how they kind of market themselves.
Well, it was an offshoot of the Mormon. I believe as they went out west, an offshoot of them went up into Michigan. And they populated, to whatever extent they, I don't know how many there were, Beaver Island.
Yes, that's exactly right. So when John Smith died in Illinois, the original Mormon, there was a splinter of Joseph Strang taking his folks up to Wisconsin, and then Brigham Young took a larger section to Utah. And the folks who went to Wisconsin ultimately settled in a town called Voree, Wisconsin. And then Strang took them over to Beaver Island, which at the time was populated by a lot of Irish fishermen who were not all that excited to see all these Mormons come across. So there was this natural tension between the Irish fishermen and this new Mormon population that was setting up. And then that tension extended into the mainland over in Charlevoix, where they were concerned about some of the antics of the Mormons, some of which were actually involved in piracy, apparently, to sustain themselves. And so these fishermen weren't all that excited to see kind of these goings-on happening. There was a little bit of tension there. And so when these two Mormon dissidents offed Strang on the dock, they timed it just so that there was a federal ship out in the water, so they were able to basically jump to a little boat and get over to the USS something, Michigan or whatever it was. They turned themselves in, and when they went, the ship went to Mackinac Island, and when the crowd found out what had happened, these two people were greeted with loud cheers. allegedly a, it was a kind of a mock trial in a kangaroo court. They were fined $1.50 and basically greeted with cheers. So then when word got back to Charlevoix what had happened, the people were so excited. These Irish fishermen basically told the Mormons, you got 3 days to pack your stuff and get out because we're coming. And so the Mormons, a lot of them, started packing up because once the angry mob hit Beaver Island, they torched all of the Mormon churches, houses, and everything in a big flush to get them, shove them back into Wisconsin, where Strang actually held on after he got shot on the dock. They brought him back to his home in Varee, Wisconsin, so he could say goodbye to his parents before he died. But that's where the Mormons left. And so now, outside of the King Strang Hotel and a print shop where they made their first newspaper, there is no sign of Mormons on Beaver Island.
Now, am I remembering right that he was in the legislature?
He was. So when he first got to Beaver Island, he was actually a very colorful and exciting personality, and folks actually really liked him. And he was elected to one term in the state house. But then he got a little strange, and apparently his ego and his rules got bigger and more strict. And that's when things went a little sideways with him, and he lost a lot of popularity. And,
well, can you be a king and a state representative at the same time? I didn't know that was allowed.
Apparently. Some people may think you could be a governor at the same time. A couple of years that Engler was there, I think they might have thought he was king. But apparently you could be a king back then, and you'd go on your second job as a lawmaker.
I don't think that would be allowed under the 1963 Constitution.
I don't think attacking Beaver Island and burning the people out and sending them away would have been allowed either.
Only in the 1800s. Oh, and then to put a capper on this, the island next to Beaver Island is called High Island, which is where apparently, as rumor had it, Strang's treasury was buried somewhere on High Island. Because once the note came that the folks from the mainland were coming to basically drive the Mormons out, the Mormon hierarchy got scared and buried the treasury in High Island with the anticipation that they would come back. Well, they never came back. But the only clues as to what happened with the treasury was that it was 30 paces from the most prominent tree on High Island. But then in the 1900s, the loggers came in and took out all the trees. So
how come nobody has come along with the idea of we're going to have a ferry to this High Island? High Island, is that it?
Yeah.
And there's going to be all kinds of people climbing on there and clamoring to go over there and search for the treasure.
That it seems like that would be a great treasure. That's almost pure Michigan. We can do a treasure
that's
hunt.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, how come we don't have this thing being going through the legislature, sort of kind of get some ideas going as far as maybe some help for some business people?
Find King Strang's treasure.
Sounds like a Discovery Channel show.
All right. Leave it to the MERS Monday podcast to think of a new opportunity for Michigan tourism. Go to High Island, but there's nothing on High Island. Just so you know, there's a couple of old DNR buildings that are pretty much caved in and uninhabitable right now, and that's about it.
Oh, okay. You don't suppose somebody that used to work there maybe found it themselves?
Mm-hmm. Good question. All right, well, we're going to leave you with that. I'm Kyle Blinn. Thanks to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Till next week, take care.